So we've been thinking a lot about recipes lately, like what they are and what they do. Because recipes seem like simple things, right? They're instructions. But they're also promises, and aren't promises always a little bit complicated? You know, they can be kept, they can be broken, they can have consequences no one ever intended. Well, today, we'll hear about a legendary cookbook writer with Alzheimer's, finding her memories through cooking. We'll ask why some recipe writers lie and lie and lie to us about onions, and right now, we'll talk to a cookbook author who wanted to write her book without any recipes at all. Samin Nosrat is that author. She's taught cooking for years. In fact, Michael Pollan credits her for teaching him how to cook. And her teaching revolves around a ridiculously simple idea, that to be a great cook, all you need to know is how to control four things: salt, fat, acid, and heat. Understand those, and you'll always be able to make delicious food, no recipes required. And when I learned about her method, I had that moment, you know, when someone shows you how to see something that's been sitting right in front of you, and you're like, how did I not know that before? Well, Samin, so good to have you here.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Francis.
So I am so excited to talk to you today because this show, actually, the theme of this show is we want to talk about the, you know, the pleasures and pains of recipes. And you have a new cookbook, Salt, Fat, Acid, Heat, and it's amazing. For listeners at home, I actually, in my double life, I am an editor at a publishing house. And early in my time there, the proposal for this book came in to one of my colleagues, and she right away, like literally 2 hours later, she sent it to the whole team and said, oh my God, this book is amazing. It's going to be incredible. We need to buy this book. And so I was like, oh, let me take a look at this proposal. And reading Samin's proposal actually taught me in so many ways what a great cookbook proposal looks like. And sadly, we didn't win the auction, but the book is out now. And what's amazing is that it's a cookbook that only kind of reluctantly has recipes. So Samin, why did you want to write the book this way?
Well, to be perfectly honest, I only included recipes because I knew there was just no way a publisher would publish the book without them. So, but
we would have made you do that too.
Yeah. But, and I did have a lot of, what's the word? Like, just philosophical sort of feeling like a hypocrite throughout the making of the book, which was, I was like, well, I'm writing a whole book teaching you how to cook without recipes, only to be followed by the equivalent of a second book of recipes. So the whole idea behind Salt, Fat, Acid, Heat is that if you can learn how to use these four elements, which really play a role in everything that we cook, you can make anything taste good with or without a recipe. And as I would teach classes to people, they would end up spending over the course of our curriculum, you know, 20 or 30 hours with me, 4 or 5 hours per element, salt, fat, acid, and heat. And we did a lot of interactive cooking and tasting and adjusting. And I would do everything I could to walk people through the philosophy of how to use the four elements. And we wouldn't have recipes in the classes. And then at the end of the fourth class, every single time people would come up to me and say, oh, okay, could you just send me the recipe packet, please? And I was like, you guys, come on. I just taught you how to cook without them. And so I came to realize that I couldn't just throw people to the wolves. You know, as much as I am trying to instill in you this philosophy of instinctual cooking, that you also need training wheels. And a good recipe can be training wheels as long as you also aren't going to abandon your own common sense and your own sense of agency.
It's something beyond, for a lot of people, the idea that it's a training wheel. It's sort of like the coin of the realm, right? It's like that's actually how we communicate cooking. Like that's the language we use, is the recipe, even if your whole point in your teaching is saying you don't need a recipe. But what do you think that is? Why do you think people have that mindset?
I think even once you do internalize salt, fat, acid, heat, and I certainly have, I still find myself looking to recipes as for inspiration, or particularly when I'm going into a new cuisine or cooking something from a place that I've never cooked from before. I don't know, you know, the specific spice combinations and amounts of things in an Indonesian curry. So I do need to refer to a recipe for that.
Sure.
And so for me, while it might be a really exotic thing that I need to look at for just even a basic guide or ratios, I understand that this has been my career for, you know, 17 years. So I've memorized a lot, right? Like, mm-hmm. And I've created a lot of mnemonics for myself to understand a lot of basics about a lot of the foods of a lot of different cultures. And people cooking at home every day probably don't have that huge internal database. So for them, I think probably that recipe is that sort of security blanket or that training wheel.
What I think is also exciting about recipes is I edited a cookbook a couple years ago with Tyler Cord. He's a great cook, awesome, awesome, lovely person, one of the funniest human beings alive. And we were talking about his writing recipes, and like, it feels so weird to be writing recipes because I often, you know, I usually don't cook out of recipes. And he's like, but I've started to really love it. I'm like, oh, why? And he said, what I realize is, you know, when I start cooking, like, I cook my food, I cook my style, and my dishes will smell a certain way. I know how they're supposed to smell, you know, because I know my cooking so well. When I follow someone else's recipe, it's amazing because my house starts to smell like someone else's cooking. And like, because, you know, they might brown the onions longer than I would. So his take on it is when he starts following recipes, he loves to follow them to the letter and not improvise, because if he improvises, he goes right back into his style and his habits. And he loves cooking someone else's recipe because he feels like he can actually taste someone else's food. And I thought that was such a lovely way to look at it, and such a generous way of looking at it, really.
Oh, it's so beautiful and so insightful. And also, I think, really trusting. And I love that way of looking at it. And maybe it's going to make me want to do that a little bit.
So let's go to your food. Salt, fat, acid, heat, right? Like, as you said in the book, these are the four things you need to master to really just be a good cook. And after decades of hearing phrases like, you know, pork fat rules and fat is flavor, I think fat is pretty obvious. We know we like fat. And salt is a thing that every chef talks about. Every chef is always saying, you know, the difference between my food and your food at home is I use more salt than you do. So just try using more salt and keep tasting as you salt things along the way. Heat is pretty clear because heat is what actually cooks food. So acid, of the four, is maybe the one for the average home cook that, you know, we might not be thinking about. And I feel like acid is still kind of like a pro cook's term, right? In regular people language, we just say that acidic things are sour things. So why are these important, and why is this one of the four key elements?
Yeah, I mean, it is interesting. I just started realizing acid kind of sounds clinical, you know, but it is to me and to my palate very, very important. And part of it is because my family is from Iran, and Iranian food and Iranian palates are skewed toward sour things and acidic things in ways that other palates are often skewed toward sweet things. Hmm. And so I grew up eating a lot of tangy things. So I really miss that acidity when it's not there. Mm-hmm. But really, on the most basic level, what acidity brings and what acid balance brings is it helps to balance our food and create contrasts. And I did a lot of science homework. I'm not a scientist, but I did do a lot of homework and found a lot of really kind of cool tidbits. And two of the kind of most interesting things I found out about acid, well, one sort of just about cooking in general, which is as humans, we have developed sort of this instinct that draws us toward contrasts. And in our food, we want contrasts in flavor and in texture and in temperature and in color. And so what acidity offers is sort of a second taste to bounce that first thing off of. So whether it's salty and sour or sweet and sour or even rich and sour, like fatty and sour, if something is balanced properly, then all of a sudden, all of these other parts of flavor become available to us. And so rather than falling flat, all of a sudden we can start tasting all of these different aspects. And I don't know, I was making Caesar salad the other day, and there's all these different forms of acid that I like to work into a Caesar salad, which is already very rich with kind of a mayonnaise-y base and multiple forms of salty and umami-rich ingredients like anchovies and Parmesan cheese and Worcestershire sauce. And so there's already a lot going on. But if you eat it and it's not properly balanced, it will just taste rich and creamy and salty, and there's nothing else. And I find that happens a lot at Thanksgiving too, where there are so many rich and bland and salty foods on the table and not a lot to contrast with. So in that Caesar, I always am working in lemon juice and vinegar, lemon juice and vinegar, lemon juice and vinegar until I get the balance right and the thing pops in my mouth. And this is sort of where the second really interesting tidbit science thing that I found out comes in, which is... So when we use the word mouth watering, when you think of something as mouth watering, it's like your mouth is so excited to eat it. You know, it makes your mouth water.
It's like the
you
cliche of deliciousness.
Of yeah. But actually our mouths, our human bodies are like programmed to create saliva whenever we eat something acidic because acidic things will corrode our teeth. So our bodies actually produce saliva to protect our teeth. And so when you eat something that's properly acidic, it will make your mouth, you know, smack with deliciousness. And so it's that kind of thing where, like, if you're eating that Caesar salad dressing and it's not acidic enough, it's just going to feel cloying and rich in your mouth. And when you're eating your plate of Thanksgiving food and it's just, you know, brown things and creamy things and roasted things, and maybe things that aren't balanced properly with acid, then it's not going to make your mouth feel full and delicious, which is, I believe, my theory about Thanksgiving is like everyone's obsessed with the cranberry sauce because on most tables, it's the only acidic thing. So so it's this thing where you want that. You want to make sure that every plate and every meal is balanced with acid so that you get that mouth-watering smack.
Oh, that's interesting. You know, it's funny because I have always loved mayonnaise. Like before I even knew the word for mayonnaise, I remember like loving it. And it wasn't until like a few years ago. So like I'm 40 years old. So I've been eating mayonnaise for, you know, probably a solid 35 years until one day I looked and said, wait, like the main flavor of mayonnaise is lemon.
Mm-hmm.
Like
totally.
It never even occurred to me because I loved it because it was so rich and luscious. You know, it just made every ham sandwich freaking delicious. And then finally realized, like, oh, it actually tastes like lemon. It's not just fat. And you're totally right. A good mayonnaise is perfectly balanced so that you can't really say, oh, is that a sour thing or is that a rich thing? It's just delicious.
Totally. Totally. Yeah. And that's what I find is true about pretty much like why as humans we're drawn to all the condiments is because they're sort of if you don't get your food right, in the first place, you can use the condiments to get you there to deliciousness. And that's the kind of wonderful thing I think about salt, fat, and acid is that we all already know what something that is balanced with these things tastes like because those are the things we prefer. And so when you're at the salad bar or the, you know, taco place and you're putting sour cream and salsa and guacamole, which is made with lime on your burrito, it's not because, I don't know, you're just like a condiment fiend. It's also because those things take a pile of beans and cheese and meat and make them pop, you know?
Mm. Yeah, like tasting and balancing with acid, like such a good thing for cooks to get a feel for. Thanks so much for coming in today, Samin.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. So fun to chat with you.
Samin Nosrat is the author of Salt, Fat, Acid, Heat. And you know, we had such a good time talking about acid that we went long. And she talked about a favorite dish of both of ours, linguine with clams, and how she makes it with this technique of layering in the wine and the lemon and all these different acidic things to end up with just a killer version. You can hear that extended interview on podcast or at splendidtable.org. And of course, you can find Samin's recipes for Caesar salad and pasta with clams at our website too. And I say, of course, because like Samin said of her students, people will always want the recipe, no matter what you teach them. You know, when I worked at food magazines and websites, recipes were the coin of the realm. It never mattered, frankly, how great the stories were, how beautiful the layout or the art. People came for the recipes. That's what got the clicks. And you know, that fact doesn't always sit well with some people. Mostly, you know, serious writers who think that there's more to food writing than just a list of ingredients and some stupid instructions. And a friend of mine, Ronnie Lundy, who, full disclosure, is an author whose book I edited, told me a story literally 2 days ago. And she told me about a friend of ours who became the food editor of a literary magazine. And he said at the time, proudly, that he would never run a recipe in his food section. So Ronnie looked at him and said, well, you know, that's fine, but, you know, that's actually a pretty sexist thing to say. And he goes, well, what do you mean? And she said to him that if you look at the history of recipe writing, in America at least, recipes were mostly written by women who weren't really expected to do any other kind of writing. And if you read between the lines of recipes, you can often find the things unspoken, the clues to their lives, the keys to discovering what they value. You see what's important enough to make for a celebration or what's meant for living on a budget. And you pick up old community cookbooks and you'll see savvy women building up their own reputations while introducing their recipes. Or you see when, in the 50s and 60s, women start emphasizing tricks and shortcuts to save time, meaning to give themselves time to have lives outside of the kitchen. It's all there, just between the lines. So Ronnie gave him a good talk about all this stuff. And you know, after she told me that story, I went home and picked up an old copy of the magazine that our friend was at, and sure enough, there's a recipe for pork chops.